Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is Carl from Deviant Legion and ISF, and today we're doing a commentary in honor of the passing of Sidney Poitier of a film called Brother John. And with me, as always, not as always since she's working these days, but with me today is my co-host, Rachel. Say hello, Rachel.
Hello, Rachel. And just really quickly for Carl, before we go further, I need you to actually send me the link.
I did.
No, I'm looking at my message in both. Yeah, do it again, because I'm looking at my message, and you sent me the message saying, here's the link, but there's no actual link.
Oh, okay. I could do that. No problem at all. I'll do that right now. And also with us is a special guest, Tim Wickens. Say hello, Tim, and introduce yourself.
Hi, everyone. Hi, K Squared, Carl. This is great to be here. I'm just mostly a lifelong movie fan. Grew up watching movies on UHF. I have a Facebook page called So Many Movies, So Little Time, and I just love movies when I get the chance to watch them. So it's great to be here.
Well, so tell us, you know, it's really interesting because you posted two films that I was really considering for this watch. One of them being the one we're going to watch tonight, Brother John, and I want you to talk a little bit about that. But also, the Wilby Conspiracy, too, which is another great 70s Sidney Poitier film. So you and I have much the same taste. So tell us a little bit about Brother John.
So Brother John, so I'll just give you a little background. I kind of, when I was a teenager in high school, me and a couple of friends would watch a lot of karate movies, mostly Chuck Norris and Bruce Lee. And, you know, I was a big fan of Sidney Poitier, To Serve with Love, Blackboard Jungle, such and such, you know, In the Heat of the Night. And so I turned on my friend to Sidney Poitier, with one of my friends saying, this is like the best actor I've ever seen, which, you know, compared to Chuck Norris is not much. And so for my birthday one year, he bought me the VHS of Brother John. And this was a movie I had never heard of before. So I was really, you know, shocked. What? I've never seen this Sidney Poitier movie from like the early 70s. So I was really just enthralled with it. And it's just such a different film than anything he's done or ever did afterwards. It just, I don't know, it's just sublime. And it takes multiple viewings, I think, to really, well, I don't know if you really ever understand it, but just to really enjoy fully what the movie's about.
And there, this is a film we had early HBO when I was growing up in the early 70s, like 72, 73. And I saw so many films on HBO, and the 70s were my decade of coming of age and really movie watching. And there were so many smaller films because HBO wanted content. They weren't doing their original content, so they were filling it with films, and films that really didn't make much of a splash domestically. But this particular film really intrigued me, and I'll get into it more as we go into the film, but it's definitely in my wheelhouse, and those people that know me know basically, you know, if it's a religious film or anything to do with that, I'm interested. Right, Rachel? What's the story you always tell about me? Rachel?
Yeah.
Okay.
I
was just asking what's the story that you always tell about me about religious films?
Oh, God bless Jesus. So if there was ever a serial killer in the house, all he would have to do to draw Carl out is just be like, hey, I've got a religious horror film on, and Carl's going to pop out of the woodwork and be like, okay, cool, you can, you know, kill me now, but can we just finish the movie first?
Exactly.
Uh-oh, don't show Carl Ganja and Hess then.
Oh, I've seen it many times. Trust me.
So this one I haven't seen. I am the virgin on this one, Carl. You've been loving to get me with this lately. I have zero clues, zero expectations. I have no idea. I just know that personally, I love Sidney Poitier, and I'll talk about that later and why. But I may have seen this movie as a kid, but I don't remember any of it. So I'm really, really excited.
Mm-hmm. And so just so people know, it stars Sidney Poitier. Also in the cast is Will Gere, Bradford Dillman, Beverly Todd, Lincoln Kilpatrick, and several other people whom I don't know by name. But what we're going to do now is we are at the link. People, all you have to do is on all the links that I provided, and I put one on Tim's too, I put a link to the film. So you can just click on that. And we're going to start now. I'm about 1 second or 3 seconds in at the Columbia. It's just coming up, the Columbia logo. So we're going to start here. I'm going to do a countdown. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go. And we hit play on go. So are we all ready? Rachel, you ready?
I'm ready already.
Okay, cool. So here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go. And that's the early Columbia logo from the 70s, or, you know, from the 70s. I can't believe this is over 50 years old, this film. It is 50 years old.
And that's another thing that I've noticed about Poitier films. Like, I say another, like I've already talked about him, but has anybody else ever noticed how his films all seem to have this, like, really beautiful, gentle guitar surround soundtrack?
Most of them do, particularly from this era. You get into films like we talked a little bit about, The Wilby Conspiracy, and then like No Way Out, I think, is one of his ones that he did in the 90s, but not so much. But these sort of like personal small films, you're absolutely right. And that's what this is. This is a small little film. This is not a big film.
There's a great Quincy score, Quincy Jones score on this. I mean, he also did In the Heat of the Night.
Absolutely.
And, of course, is best known for, well, maybe from our generation, a little bit of a Stamp It, a Son theme.
Mm-hmm. And Toots Thielman is a great harmonica player, too, by the way. Go ahead, Ray.
I'm always interested to know the age difference in who's on the show. So. Tim, how old are you?
I will be 49 this August.
Okay.
So I'm the old man with the walker. I'm 64. And you're the youngin', Rach.
I am. I'm the baby. I'm 36.
This is interestingly enough. Sidney Poitier's first film as a film producer.
Yes.
E&R Productions, which I always find that weird that he would pick this film to do. Come on
in here. Well, you know, at this point in time, he'd done a lot of films with racial themes and so on and so forth. And this certainly has a lot of that in it. Okay, and very much the outsider. Okay, and that's something that would appeal to him at this point in time, for sure. Now, this is before he became a director.
Which I believe is his next film, Buck and the Preacher. Isn't that his first his directorial debut?
Absolutely. Buck and the Preacher.
Written by the same man who wrote this movie.
Mm-hmm. Ernest Canoy.
Yes.
Now, Will Geer is someone that actually was blacklisted in the '50s. And he always played this fatherly type or grandfatherly type of role, even when it was a villain, like in Seconds. But a really good actor. And here we have Bradford Dillman, who was all over the place in the 70s.
In the great movie Bug, which is one of my favorite roles of his.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite roles of his is go ahead, Tim.
Will Geer is in this interestingly small Canadian movie called The Rowdy Man, written by and starring Gordon Pinsent. And Will Geer plays like this old-timer that's friends with the Rowdy Man. And one line he says in there, he's dying, of course. It was just he's in a assisted living. And he talks about these love letters he has. And he's like, what happens to them when you die? Because there's love still in there. And he wants his friend, played by Gordon Pinsent, to keep these letters. And I thought that was one of the best scenes I've seen him in. You know, of course, I grew up with him as Grandpa Walton. So.
Oh, absolutely. Now, this particular scene is important to set up everything. So we're being very quiet here. Of course, I know Rachel was watching the movie. She hasn't seen it yet.
Yeah, I'm hiding in the background right now trying to figure out what the fuck is up. Like, is in this jar in the background? It's so creepy looking. I think it's candy, but it could also be owl poop.
I mean, the whole
and
mystery.
How many times have you seen Sidney Poitier with a mustache? No.
Indulge your father for a few minutes further. Then Sarah and the other daughter, father, the baby, and a five-story business park in a small town in Indiana. But there was a small insurance
Forgive me, I just got some tonic water.
Yes, See, that candy jar next to the weird ruffly lamp on his desk, what is in that?
I don't know. Go ahead, Grace.
I was going to say, go ahead, Tim.
I was going to say, Jer and Dillman really act off each other really well in this movie. Actually, there's quite a lot of good acting in this film.
Oh, absolutely.
Including Mother Jefferson, who pops up later.
Mm-hmm. And Paul Winfield comes in, too.
Yes. A very underappreciated actor.
Absolutely. Of course, he makes his real mark the next year in Sounder.
I'm a big fan of Gordon's War. I don't know if you've seen that one. Ossie Davis directed it.
I haven't seen that in years. I mean, to be honest, I haven't seen this movie in 40 years.
I'm surprised you saw it on HBO, to be honest with you. I was shocked when you mentioned that it was played there. It just seems like such a small movie. And part of my me watching this late for this show tonight was the thought was, why did Sidney Poitier pick this movie?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, as I said, we were a test market for HBO when it first started. There was also another one called the Movie Channel, TMC.
Yeah.
And they wanted content. You know, they wanted content, so they bought up everything. You know, all the small movies, you know, a lot of British films that never got released here. And so it was like candy to me to watch, you know, there'd be a different film every night that I'd be watching. And I was just hooked. So that's when
unlike
I saw
today,
this.
Unlike today, where it's like the same movies over and over again.
Well, you know what? With streaming, man, they produce their own content now. So the smaller films in there is harder to find. So this is one of the reasons where I think Poitier picked this film, because, you know, there's a lot of worker unrest and so on and so forth and riots. And, of course, you know, that goes back to the 68 riots in Chicago, the Watts riots, and so on and so forth. So I could see
what
would interest him about this.
I also think that's one of the main reasons that Will Gare was involved in this, too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I never knew he was blacklisted until, like, probably 10 years ago. You know, you always think of him as this kind, not that he wasn't kindly, but you think of him as this grandfatherly figure, and here was a guy that they tried to ruin his career, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, Will Gere is one of those people where you think, you know, such a grandfatherly figure in that, and yet one of his best roles is as a villain, a real villain in Seconds, which is scary as shit. Yeah. Okay, we have a little bit of feedback. I just turned down my lead here, so that should help. I think And there he is.
The other thing that was shocking about first seeing this movie is how little dialogue Sidney Poitier has. And he has, of course, a beautiful speaking voice. Probably one of the best entrances he's ever had in a movie, too.
Absolutely.
It's completely jarring when he's there. And beautiful in the same way.
Well, you know, that brings into the, you know, into the plot of the film, you know, who is Brother John?
Yes.
And that becomes the real mystery of the film.
I've seen quite a few explanations, one even being that he's an alien, which I'm not really, that's one I'm not really behind at all.
No. I have a much different take on this. You'll see.
Who's that, Ben?
Hey, can I get a time check?
Yeah, absolutely. 15:47. Now 15:50.
Okay, hold on. Keep going for me.
Okay, hold on. 16:05.
Okay, we're good.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we're actually like right on with each other now. My computer died, so I had to throw it back on. Sorry, guys.
That happens. That happens to me too. We were doing a show yesterday, and right before the show, my internet went out. It has a tendency to do that. There's Paul Winfield.
Not the sort of Paul Winfield role you're used to seeing either.
No, that's true.
He was excellent in that role. King.
Now, the young boy is Lincoln Kilpatrick. He made a name for himself in a film called A Hero Ain't Nothing But a Sandwich.
Is Winfield in that as well?
I think so, yes. I'd have to check to make sure, but I do think so. That was one nice thing about HBO early years, because I got to see all the blaxploitation films. And that was great. I really connected to blaxploitation. I was a kid who wasn't real athletic. I had some physical problems when I was younger. And so being an outsider, I've always understood that. You know, not that it's the same thing, but
yep.
It's connected.
Oh, it's definitely a connection. Yeah, There's even a blog or an article online claiming that this was the first blaxploitation film because it came out before Sweet Sweetback's Badass Song.
No, Sweet Sweetback was before, but even before that, you had Jules Dassin's Uptight from 1968. You had the two Gravedigger Jones films.
Oh, yeah.
Come Back from Blue. And then even before that, you had The Story of a Three-Day Pass, which was Melvin Van Peebles' first.
Come Back, Charleston Blue was also written by a screenwriter here tonight.
Well, the screenplay was by Kinnoy, but that's from another author. I can't remember, but it's not.
Yeah.
Kinnoy did the screenplay, but not the the original novel.
It's a book. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Elmore Leonard, I believe, is the author.
No, I don't think so. I can find that out real quick, though. I don't think so. Hold on.
Ossie Davis directed the first movie.
Chester Hines.
Okay. What about you,
He has such presence. You know, I mean, we're doing this in honor of Poitier. And just look at him there. You know, no wonder he was the first Black American to win an Oscar and to really make a splash as an actor and, someone who could do different things. And of course, you know, that really goes back to, like, the Defiant Ones and back in the late 50s, but culminates in The Heat of the Night.
Even something like The Blackboard Jungle, he really stands out. He's a supporting actor. Or Cry the Beloved Country, even further back.
And it's very hard to see, but I happened to see it once, his portrayal of Porgy in Porgy and Bess. He doesn't do the singing in that, but he's just phenomenal.
I've never seen that, unfortunately. Well, I mean, look at Raising the Sun. I mean, my God, that whole cast is unreal.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
He has some of his most tenderest moments, I believe, in this film.
Mm-hmm.
And yet his character is aloof. Well, you know, he's very silent through the movie. He doesn't have a lot of, like I said, he doesn't have a lot of dialogue. So it almost has like this aloofness to it. But he has some wonderful scenes with the school teacher.
Your character doesn't need dialogue to portray something. I just want to say that. And that is something that he's always been great at. That is why I respect Poitier as one of the most prolific actors. It doesn't matter what color he is or what gender he is. It's just his ability to act with silence that a lot of people have not fully grasped. And he can act just by being there in a room. He is his own presence. And I think that's why he brings such a great chemistry to even small films like this, is because, you know, they don't need much from him. They just need him there, and it makes it a good movie. Plus, like you mentioned earlier, you know, even though I do wish he would talk more because that guy could just read the phone book to me, He doesn't have to.
No.
He lets everybody else do the talking.
He's a well-rounded actor, but like I said, he has such a wonderful voice as well. It's weird to see him in a role where it's surprising to see him in a role where he doesn't talk a lot. You know, he doesn't have a lot of dialogue.
No.
But exactly, no, he doesn't need that.
Interesting thing here. I want to bring this out. What they're doing right now. So they had a copy of the Quran. They have a copy of the Jewish Talmud. So there's all these copies of religious books.
Yeah.
Okay. Just want to point that all out. Empty journals. So you have the police and the union, owner of the business that everyone's on strike on, checking him out, and he knows it.
And that's the other thing that's interesting about this. Here he is, he's from this town, and yet they just have to try to peg him as an agitator from outside.
Right. And of course, you know, again, we talk about Poitier as an outsider, and there's no question why he's interested in this film, as far as I'm concerned. Because he always relished to play the outsider, particularly in this era from like the 50s to the early 70s.
I'm still trying to figure out what this film is all about right now.
You're going to need a couple of viewings, I think, to figure that out, I think.
Oh, definitely. I'm definitely going to need it without the earworms in the back. But, yeah, I'm still at a complete loss right now.
It's a film I've come to appreciate more and more over the years, definitely. I mean, it's something I was kind of like surprised at first viewing. It wasn't something I was expecting to see. Not something I was expecting to see from Sidney Poitier. And I've come to really... And I feel like you gain more from it from each viewing of it as well. And so that's why I think it's one of those movies you should see, because it just, it's not a blockbuster. It's not meant to be that. It just is poignant. And what is the heart of this movie?
Exactly.
And that's many interpretations can be brought from it.
I love movies like that. I genuinely do. So I'm hoping that I get more into it at this point.
I know I'm like you dropped out of high school, would you know that? Mm-hmm. She was like that. Also, you hit him the hell out of town. Let's go back it over in Carver's County Word. Oh, no. No, he's not.
See, that's the whole point. A black man can't do this. Black man can't travel like this. A black man can't do this. And, of course, that's part of, you know, the prejudice of the time. Let's make sure that we understand that and keep this in context. This was made in 1971. It was a much different time. Oh, my God, it's Frankenstein. Look at that forehead.
Dude, that's not a forehead. That's like a five head or a six head. I mean, I'm pretty sure he's got the map of New Jersey Turnpike on his fucking face there. Yeah, that one's. I feel you, buddy. You need man bang for real. Why is he always like teaching children in movies?
Those kids are so privileged to be playing with Sidney Poitier, seriously.
And it's like you can almost tell he either has or is the caretaker of a lot of kids because, yeah, I do that all the time with my kids. Like, oh my God, I died. I am dead now. And they think it's fucking hilarious. Kids are so dumb. I love them.
And this relationship between him and the school teacher is really good.
Oh, it's excellent. And that's why I've come to grow to appreciate more and more as I've watched that. Because before it just seemed so like there's nothing there. But the last viewing, I seem to get more and more out of it. And there's like actually a real scene of passion in there that you don't really see from in a Poitier movie, unfortunately, which is probably a product of its time.
Mm-hmm. You never got married?
No. I've been differently occupied.
What?
Yep.
I work.
That's it.
Yes.
So you have 2 days. You have 2 days. I don't feel alive, but...
Winfield. So she's doing all the talking, but look at Poitier, how he engages her by the eyes and so on and so forth. And look at the difference between the black part of town and the white part of town. It's subtle, but it's there. So the soundtrack, which is very good, is very 70s, though, right? This sort of soft rock, sort of like California sound to a certain degree. But it's Quincy Jones.
That's kind of what I was mentioning earlier. Like, it's got that very soft guitar, like, just gentle soundtrack to it. Like a lot of his movies do, by the way. Just saying.
Mm-hmm. And all the animals.
Well,
they can
give the genius
set.
Of Quincy Jones for that. Huh.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's gorgeous. Look at that. Okay, what's on the back of his sweater there?
That I can't tell.
And of course, you know, making a point of progress and destroying the land. Oh, there's all sorts of messages here. You know, I mean,
union
you need to comment.
Ecological problems, spiritual problems.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this movie kind of covers it all in very subtle ways.
Yeah. Right. Ah, he took his sweater off. So, Dillman played these officious types. And I don't know who this actor is who's playing the sheriff. But they played together very well. But Dillman always played these officious types. Probably best known role was in one of the Dirty Harry movies. He was the supervisor to Dirty Harry. Another film
that's right.
Dillman was in. Do you know which one that was, Tim?
I think that might be Magnum Force, but I'm not 100% positive.
No, I think it was The Enforcer. Magnum Force is Hal Holbrook.
Oh, you're
no,
right. Yep.
It's The Enforcer.
He's also pretty good in that William Castle movie, Bug, for AIP.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. And also, Dillman was in a film called 99 and 144, 100% Dead by Frankenheimer. And he plays
great
a film. I love that film.
I haven't I haven't seen it in a long time, but I caught it once. Maybe I saw it on YouTube, and I was really, you know, just bad reviews, but I loved it, too.
Oh, it's go ahead.
He's also in Compulsion, you know, with Orson Welles.
Mm-hmm.
And Dean Stockwell. Well, I can't believe you've seen 99 and 44% Dead. That's crazy.
Well, that came out on a double disc of two films, and I got it with a film that I love from the 70s called The Nickel Ride. And I picked it up for The Nickel Ride, and then I watched that, and I fell in love with it. It's just so over the top and fun. You know, the whole idea of the police hassling someone who's black. I mean, oh, and Poitier just acting with his eyes. God, this, yeah. Okay, so Rachel, I think you might get an idea here.
Okay. I'm trying to. I don't think they like each other very much.
No. Dan, remember that Poitier was the first actor, black American actor, ever to slap a white actor on screen.
And now he kicks the shit out of one in this movie, which deserves it. Now there's a scene in the part where he's questioning Frank. Frank says to him, "My name is Gabriel. What is I just noticed that recently. What is that supposed to mean?"
Oh, Gabriel. What's Gabriel?
Wasn't
an angel one of the avenging angels?
Yep.
An archangel, right? I mean,
yeah,
but
absolutely.
His name is, I thought that was kind of interesting that he says that because his name, you know, his name isn't Gabriel. His name is Frank. I believe his last name in the movie is Gray. And I was like, ah, that's an interesting
right.
thing that he says.
Mm-hmm.
He's trying to be all creepy religious dude, like, I am Gabriel. I am the Archangel.
I mean, you have the whole family structure, the son looking up to the father and the son being disappointed in the father, and then the whole redemption.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, that's a great story arc. That's why it's almost a trope at this point.
Yeah.
All in one scene, too.
Yeah.
And then there's still the rest of the movie. That's why Poitier is great.
You know, we are doing this in remembrance of Poitier. And one of the reasons why I thought this was the perfect movie is, A, it's not well known, but B, it really shows Poitier in a sort of different light. You know, we've already mentioned how quiet the film is and how quiet he is. But there's a lot more to it as we go along here.
Well, this is what I thought of the most when you asked me to join this watch party. Was it just hit me, like, why did he pick this movie? Like, what is it about this film? I mean, here he is. Like I said, this is his E&R Productions. This is his company. Okay, we're gonna, this the first movie we're making. This is going to be our first movie. The director had only done a few feature films. The screenwriter had only done, I think had done no feature films at that time. It just was an interesting film to pick. Like, this is what we're going to, this bang, what we're going out of the shoot with is Brother John, which was originally going to be
But let's not forget that at this point in time, which is the early 70s, I always say that the 70s are the most depressing decade in film. And so you have these smaller films. You know, one of the things was that the people in charge were the old people with cigars, and the whole attitude had changed. We were getting a lot of films like Getting Straight and Move about campuses, you know, and campus unrest and so on and so forth at this point in time. So they wanted, this old crew of producers were just basically letting people try and seeing what sticks to the wall.
Yep.
And this has everything in it. It has distrust of the police. It has racial unrest. It has all these elements that make it a perfect film for the early 70s.
Even a love story. It's a small love story, but even a little bit of a love story is included in here.
Absolutely.
I mean, only the 70s can make a film like Don't Look Now and Day of the Locust. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Again, a lot of this is all scenes. And it focuses on these actors, some of whom I do not know who they are, but they're really good in this. Winfield.
Yeah.
You know, that was another thing about Blaxploitation, is that the women, you know, didn't take any crap from anyone. As a general rule.
Pam Grier was
a star, hell yeah.
I mean, you know?
I have a wonderful story about going to see Bones when it came out. And I was the only white person in the theater, and there was a black gentleman in the theater. And he looked at me like, why are you here? And I looked at him like, Pam Grier. Said, oh, cool. Come on over. And so, yeah. Yeah, I was a huge Pam Grier fan.
It was nice to see her come back with that Tarantino movie.
Yes.
I mean, all these years kind of almost, I wouldn't say forgotten, but kind of left out of, like, I mean, you know, she was a pretty good actress, really, you know? I mean, she
oh, she's
a
great actress.
She was in a small movie with Bruce Dern, which really shined in.
Which, by the way, I saw for the first time ever recently.
What movie was this?
Jackie Brown.
Oh.
I believe that's the movie you're talking about.
Yeah.
I saw it for the first time ever about 7 or 8 months ago.
Did you like it?
I did, actually. It was a less obnoxious and obtrusive Tarantino flick than a lot of them are. So, yeah, I did enjoy
it.
Well,
I consider it his best film, by far.
I would have to echo that, Carl, actually. It's probably my favorite of his. Mother Jefferson, she is so great in this role.
Yes. So Rachel, you have any ideas yet?
I'm not going to say anything.
Okay. Well, we'll ask you at the end of the movie.
Well, I have to confess, I'm pretty open-minded about what it, I mean, I'm not really sure what the whole, his character is either, you know? I keep on coming up with different ideas of what I think he is, or represents, but I can't say that I'm 100% sure on any of them.
Well, I think the movie's open-ended enough that you make your own decision. Now, I certainly have a thought on this, but we won't talk about that until the end of the movie.
Okay. Yeah, that's the best, I think.
Yeah, that's a pretty big hint, kids. Oh, again, notice how the director focuses on the eyes all the way through this.
Portier has the power to express with his eyes, with his expressions, with his body. I mean, I echo on what Rachel says earlier on. He's definitely a complete all-around actor.
Yeah.
How about? Yes, we just have those in good. Right? Doing it on you. Thanks, Daniel. People like that.
Did he actually say words, or did he just mumble in a way that we all understood it?
Sort of both. Both. I think when it comes down to it, one of the reasons I picked this film is really you see Poitier have such a presence without doing much, right? Just the way he's walking here and all of this. I mean, it's just amazing.
Unfortunately, I could not find anything that he wrote or said about making this movie, but I would have to guess this is something that he really, really fully believed in. And you can see that in the way he ended. Not that he gives lesser performances in other films, but that this was his film and the film he really wanted to make at that point in time.
Well, you know, I mean, you take a look at any of the remembrances and honors that were written about him as soon as he passed, there wasn't one mention of this film. Not one.
No. It's kind of always been forgotten since it was released, really, unfortunately, but...
Mm-hmm.
And it's a small film. I mean, I think it is what it is. I mean,
I agree.
It's a good film, you know.
I guess the word you would say now, or the phrase, would be hidden gem, because
Definitely. It
is hidden. And this actress didn't do much after this film. She's very good in this film, but didn't do much afterwards. At least not in film.
Well, she was in Moving. She played Richard Pryor's wife in it. I don't know if you ever saw that movie. And she was in another Poitier movie, right? I believe she's in, or two of them.
Is she in Wilby? I think, maybe.
No, I think she is. Hold on, I wrote it down. Where is she? Beverly Todd.
Okay, check it out.
She was in The Lost Man, which I still have not seen, unfortunately, and she was in They Call Me Mr. Tibbs.
Okay, that's the one.
I have not seen The Lost Man yet, unfortunately. I hope to rectify that.
No, that's one I don't know either. It's one I have not seen.
And she's great in this, you know?
Oh,
and
she's superb.
She might be the only cast member that's still living from this movie as well.
Right.
I don't think Will Gear's still around, is he?
It's a very quiet scene. It's the scene where he speaks the most, by the way.
Can I just get a time check? I lost track for a little bit.
107:42. Okay, now 107:50. You with us?
I'm with you.
Okay, good.
That deputy played LBJ in a movie, which you can kind of see LBJ in him. And one of the great things about this film is there's really no overacting. It's very nuanced. It's very subtle. you know, everyone's just kind of like, it's all full of like, almost real-life characters in this movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's nothing sensational about it, besides maybe what Brother John, you know, is about the only sensational thing.
What the hell are we looking for?
He's using Carl's invisible ink on those journals.
Just so you know, someone's got, we're getting a little bit of bleeding.
There's a big scene right here.
Oh yeah.
He's a super cunning linguist. I mean, he knows every language. New Jersey.
What is this? Yeah. Are you even caring about
Key right here too. That really got me the last time I watched this to remember. What, well, mostly
yeah.
Blank journals. That's like, I don't know, I found that super powerful. You know, you take pictures, you write things down to remember things, mm-hmm. and it's just a journal, an empty book that, well, maybe an empty book signifies a place and people and or people.
I've had a lot more experience where I get on
I mean, the music is great in this film, but the silent parts are even are just makes the silent
are
parts
even
more powerful. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I actually really love the score.
He escaped from the county road, John. Oh, some years ago. He's been privy with some of the ones. John has not been involved with me.
Yes, Brother John has got a phone number.
I'll be honest.
I don't think he's a Christian. I love that part, too.
Yeah.
God rest. Yeah, well, let's see. I'm going to be white is white and black is black. And I'm going to be I don't know if that's going to be about screens. But if I get it, I'm going to stand far. And there ain't going to be no country good if I do this. Believe me? These people are going to be, damn, man, why don't I have a problem? No, because those boys are mean, and they'll be heading up to the gas and everything. I love you, and we hold something about this church, and maybe they pick me up on ACP. Or what we're going to do. You don't want to
go down on a minute. Let me tell you the truth. At night, tell me, tell me the truth. Mother, father, Sarah, and Charlie. All dead.
And of course, here you have a great scene coming up.
The end has so many nuggets, like they've come fast and furious almost.
No, absolutely.
It's like the film built up to all these little pieces.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this movie really is like a puzzle. I mean, the music is so ominous, too, and that, like, beating drum is almost like time. Time is, like, running out, I find it, to me, almost.
I'll take care of you.
This quote.
Yeah, this is incredible. That's why we're so quiet.
Yeah.
He might just be a paranoid, schizophrenic. I might be a senile psychotic. There isn't your duty.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it might be so comfortable to talk to someone who knew. And kind of me. You need to be born in life. How might you?
I love him in this.
Yeah,
he's such a great role for Wilkier.
After all that, to have that little piece right there.
Mm-hmm.
What about the image? It's good people. What about love? Man, isn't he just an animal?
I mean, that frenetic drum beat, you know, it really gets me.
Climbing over you, it's the wash. I brought you in here, and I ought to be here when we go. That makes sense. Oh, man. When will I come?
And that's Brother John. I mean, wow. I mean, the last 10-15 minutes alone are worth the price of admission. I mean, mm-hmm. My God, what a powerful ending. Man.
So what do you think, Rachel? I want to get your thoughts on this.
Definitely. Good.
Rachel, you with us?
Oh, no, I mean, loser.
Well, I'll take a look here in a second. We might have lost her. Yeah, we did lose her.
Oh, no.
We did.
I would have loved to heard someone's opinion on something they'd never seen before. Let's see this movie.
Absolutely. So since we've lost Rachel, that happens. She gets raptured. Let's talk a little bit about what
the wind came for her.
Well, what we call that rapture when because Blog Talk generally will take us off and that sort of thing, we have to call back in. So let's get your thoughts on the ending and what you think Sidney Poitier is or is not.
So this was my latest view on this was I thought about, I think I said told you earlier, this movie was originally supposed to be his last name, Kane, which is K-A-N-E. But Kane and
right.
Abel, Kane kills Abel and is punished by God to be a wanderer. So I felt that
mm-hmm.
was this connection, that he is this wanderer, a spiritual being, but that is taking down all the bad things and just seeing all the bad in the world. And he's trapped to just wander. I mean, the whole
mm-hmm.
thing where he said people like maggots squirming on, you know, on an apple, that really
mm-hmm.
kind of made me see that, you know, how much misery and inhumanity in man he's seen all over this globe. And so that's
mm-hmm.
one of my it's almost like he's taking the list of all the people when their judgment day comes.
And you could also go back earlier to the Gilgamesh
Oh my God.
Myth.
I mean
the one. You know, you could also go back as far as that.
That's a good point, Carl.
Yeah. Yeah, because you take a look at any of the, you know, religious or you know, folk tales of ancient cultures, there always seems to be this character that roams the earth and doesn't die and sort of catalogs everything that's going on. And so, you know,
there's the Cain and Abel, there's the Gilgamesh,
yep.
And very much, you know, the idea of having the Quran, having the Talmud, so on and so forth.
No,
that
no
all
languages.
Mm-hmm.
Being
exactly.
All the places. Yeah.
You know, because he's checking out different cultures, and really, in a lot of ways, even though he's seen the evil, what he's saying in many, many ways, and I think one of the things is that we're all alike. We all have faults, no matter
yes.
who we are and what we are and what particular prejudices and that we may have. That really we're all in this boat together. And I find that to be basically the message of the film. Though it is depressing. You know, I mean, this is not a happy film by any means.
Not at all. So the one thing that kind of throws it off a little, like to interpret it, is the whole sort of love scene, the whole connection, I should say, with the teacher, because you know he's so human and so tender, and then the court, and you know, not that he's an evil spirit or anything, but there's so much humanity in him in certain points in this film, when he's playing with the kids, the bed scene with the children, that you're like, maybe he's just a regular guy, and everyone's like, you know, why can't he be all these places and show up when people die? Of course, that's a little too far-fetched,
but
you know what I mean?
Well, you know,
there's enough humanity.
Absolutely, but let's not forget what Will Geer says at the end. You know, that there is love, that there are people. You know, there is good in people. And so he responds to the good. You know, and he sees good, but he also sees evil. And so he is very conflicted. And you can see it in his eyes, and the way he comports himself.
It's one of his best performances. It's kind of sad that it's really not well known as it should be. Because if you watch it, it's like, God, I mean, this guy is such a powerful actor. Well, you know, like I said, I wasn't trying to knock him about that he has a limited amount of dialogue, but you know, you watch Sidney Poitier and you love his diction. The way he talks, he doesn't sound like Kermit the Frog like I do. You know what I mean? He has a beautiful speaking voice. So it's strange. It takes you by surprise to watch a film where it's like, wow, he's not saying much, even though he is saying much with everything else, his actions, his eyes. You know, I don't know. It's an amazing movie.
Yeah, I agree. Very, very much so. What I was going to say real quickly was that's one of the reasons I picked this film. I mean, it was funny because you posted it right after Cindy had passed away. You posted a poster, and I saw it on so many movies. And I said, that's the movie we need to do.
Oh, wow.
You know, for Cindy Poitier. Because it is unknown. And for people to really watch this, I think they'll be extremely surprised. And pleased that there's a film out there, Brother John, that they don't know that's as damn near as good as anything that Poitier ever did. And who could argue with his abilities and the movies that he's been in, the great films?
Yep.
Seriously. But this is one of those really unknown films.
Every movie he's been in almost is a really well-made and a great performance by him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, we were doing so many movies so little time on Facebook. We was continuing a theme week of movies that you believe people should see. And this definitely is one of those movies I believe people should see. It's not well-known. It's one like Peter Sellers' Hoffman, which is another movie I love a lot, that people, if they see these movies, they're like, wow, this is such a great little film. How come I've never heard of it? I'm so shocked that you saw it on HBO, because when I was given this as a present in the late 80s, I was like, what the hell? What is Brother John? Like a Sidney Poitier movie I've never heard of? This is weird. Like, the heck is this?
Well, you know, it's funny. It's how you are introduced to a film. And I had this conflagration when I was like 14 years old. We moved up to Bradford, Pennsylvania in 1972. And by 1973, HBO or TMC, one of them, started, you know, basically getting test areas to try out and see if it would work. And so Bradford was one of them. But also at the same time, I'm working, quote, working, at a drive-in and seeing Herschel Gordon Lewis and Blood Freak stuff like that. And then, of course, in the early 80s, moved to New York, and then, boom, you know, get all that. And it's like that was the time for me, from 70 to about 86. 72 to 86, where I really, really just sucked up every film I could find. And luckily we had the ability to see this stuff. You know, Hoffman is another one that I saw on HBO.
Oh, my God. I can't believe I didn't see that so like much later. I think I bought the DVD when it came on a DVD, like, I don't know, maybe 20, whatever it was, 20 years ago. And I was like, you know, oh, wow, Peter Sellers, I've never seen, but we'll get this. I'm like, then I got it, and I watched it, I'm like, oh, my God, this movie's unbelievable. I've never seen this before. And he wants to destroy that movie.
That's the beauty of it, because what I've noticed from you and so many movies, so little time, is that it's a different type of sight. And I think it has a lot to do with you and your sensibility that you're picking out these films. I notice you're doing a lot of Canadian films right now that people don't know.
I was brought up by my grandparents who are Canadian. They've since long passed. And we used to go to Nova Scotia in the summer because of my family. And so I just have a odd, strange love for all things Canadian. And so one of those is Canadian cinema, which is, the little Canadian movies are hard to find, like The Rowdy Man I mentioned earlier.
Well,
I'm
going to tell you something right now. I'm going to set something up for you, okay? One of my best friends in the business is Paul Carupe. Paul is the person behind Canucksploitation.com.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to contact Paul. See if we can get him on, and you're going to be a guest. No question about it. You're going to be on my podcast for a while, Mr. Wickens. Just let you know right now. And one other thing, before we go off, you have a family member that you're very, very proud of. So why don't you talk about your son for a second?
Well, I have two that I'm proud of, but I have one son, Cameron, who's a hockey player. He's 17 years old. He plays junior hockey, low level junior hockey, and he's a goalie. He's been doing really, really well for himself. Been named an all-star in his league. And then I have another son, my oldest son, Stephen, who, you know, he has Down syndrome, who's just a beautiful joy and one of the greatest pleasures in my life. So. And I just, you know, I love them both dearly. So thank you for mentioning them.
Oh, absolutely. Tim, I want to thank you very, very much for being on. This was an absolute blast, and we're going to do this again. Now, you had never done this before, so now that you've actually broken your cherry as a commentator, how does it feel?
It feels great. I enjoyed it a lot. It was a lot of fun, you know. I really enjoyed it. You were great to talk to. It was a great movie to watch. It was a good experience overall, definitely. I would definitely love to do it again.
Well, listen, all you have to do is tell me, hey, Carl, I got a film I want to do a commentary on. Where can we schedule it? If you think I'm kidding, I'm not. Okay?
Oh, definitely. Hey, I'm game, always.
Okay, so right now, Tim, we do a thing called housekeeping, and I just want to let people know that on Friday that Adam Ferenz is going to do the cathode ray mission, and I have to get over to my computer and remember what he's doing here, so give me a moment. So on Friday at 8 o'clock, hold on just a second, Adam will be hosting the cathode ray mission, and they're going to be doing a show on Billy Wilder. And that's going to be on Friday at 8 p.m. On Monday, we are doing the Memorial Podcast for David Whittington. David was the founder of Incredibly Strange Films, film and stuff in numerous Facebook groups, and Incredibly Strange Films, the largest Facebook movie group with nearly 500,000 members now. So David and I worked together very closely for 2.5 years, building up Incredibly Strange Films. I'm now over at his smaller site, which is Film and Stuff, and we're going to use that particular group to keep David's legacy alive. And we have his niece and his aunt and good friends, and I'm sure that people from ISF will show up, and I'll have that posted. And if you know David and want to write a little remembrance of David, just go to ISF or go to Film and Stuff and write it in the comments, and we'll be sure to share that with our audience on Monday. Then on Wednesday, all I could tell you is that we're going to be debuting a new show with Vicki Love and myself, and it's called Intent. And we're going to be talking about film and popular culture and the intent of the artist, and also get into various conversations on cancel culture and how do we look at certain things from context, from intent, and really take a look at one specific item. And this first one will be the Robert Crumb cartoons from the 60s and 70s, the counterculture cartoons. And there was a really good article, and we're going to be doing that. And that will be probably a monthly show that we'll be doing on Deviant Legion. And the other thing I do have to say is that we now have a website, and that's DeviantLegion.com. And you can go check out our new website. We also have our Patreon on there, which you can check out. We are still doing a little bit of work on the website, so be just let it, us know, but you can get to know all of us here at Deviant Legion. And I'm very pleased because that just went live last week. So that's what we've got for housekeeping at this point. Again, Tim, thank you very, very much for joining us. Really appreciate it. And we are doing this again, I can guarantee you.
Thank you for having me.
No, you're very welcome. And folks, thanks for joining us, either live or if you've listened to this on the archive, which will happen probably within the hour. We really appreciate you sharing this movie with us, and we were glad to do so. And we will see you on Friday for the Billy Wilder show. And thank you very much. And at this point, it's time to say good night. Good night, everyone. Say good night.
Good night.
All right. Good night, Tim.